Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
I feel like we might want to get something on record just acknowledging what happened.
Hey everybody, this is Joel Someone here. The interview that you're about to listen to, the first half of the recording was not recorded by me.
we had to do a bit of a re-edit. So if the first 15 minutes are a bit off, I think they'll be fine, but just in case.
I think they'll be okay, just in case. But I also am in a really squeaky chair.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah, I hope you're getting that sound effect in there. I've been drinking water and squeaking in my chair. It's fucking hot.
Buckle up, sodomites, and welcome to the Sinister Sissies podcast, your guide to true crime, horror, and everything man on man and macabre. I'm Jared, your master of depravity, and I'm here with the first international guest for the podcast, which is very exciting. We have, live from the United States, Joel Someone, adult performer and escort. Welcome, Joel.
Hey! Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be on your program.
The reason that we have a gay porn star on the podcast is we're going to be talking about gay porn murder. We're talking about the killing of Brian Cochus, who you may not know that name, but you probably know his videos. He was the founder and director of Cobra Video, and as we'll see, the lives of a very famous porn star is heavily tied in to the death of Brian Cochus. I usually don't do this. I usually don't focus on the victim so much at the start of these podcasts. But I think when it comes to Cochus, you kind of need to understand the kind of guy that he was to really understand why he was murdered. So Cochus was born on the 26th of May, 1962, and he was killed on the 24th of January, 2007. He started his career as a medical photographer for a local eye doctor. Don't know if that photography skills helps with porn, but I was thinking if it was like a medical photographer for like a colonoscopy clinic or something, that would have come more in handy. He then left that at some point and wanted to start his own cell phone business, which I don't know, maybe was a big thing in the early 2000s. In 2001, Cochus was charged with sexually assaulting a 15-year-old, which led to him being kicked out of his cell phone business. He, at this point, ended up racking up over $200,000 worth of credit card debt and was filing for bankruptcy. And it was at this particular low point in his life that he decided that the way that he was going to earn a lot of his money is through gay porn. So he started Cobra Video, which was a porn production company which focused on kind of the twink demographic for performers and, quite controversial for the time, I'd be interested to know if it's still a bit controversial, it was the twink demographic but also exclusively did bareback scenes, which I imagine particularly back then pre-prep and maybe pre the kind of testing protocols and stuff that we have now was a bit controversial. One of the things that I read was that if you worked on a, like for a bareback production company, there was almost like this de facto ban in some of the other production studios in terms of you performing for them. Because particularly in the US, there is a system of when a performer tests positive, there's like an alert that goes out, at least from my understanding of it, via the Free Speech Coalition. It can actually shut productions down if you do have a performer that tests positive. So he was already, even at the beginning of his production career, kind of a bit more of the a marginal producer or a bit more of the underground in terms of porn production.
It's easy to, and it's so funny though, is you learn how quickly like how guerrilla porn can be sometimes, in the sense they're like, we just need two boys and a camera.
Well, it's exactly what it says like with him as well. Like he just started it from home. Like it doesn't sound like you can't really. I doubt he sat down and did like a business plan and like actually tried to formalize anything. It was probably this quite opportunistic business that he started up. In 2002, Cochus was charged again for a separate assault on a minor. I think he was 16 years old. He ended up being probation because the boy had actually given Cochus a fake ID. And this would not be the last time that Cochus should probably have checked IDs a little bit better before he took performers on. Certainly the early days of Cobra Video, it wasn't an overly successful business. You know, they were selling, I believe they'd still be selling DVDs at this point, selling some DVDs and earning some money from it. But he wasn't incredibly, incredibly successful until a certain performer came onto the scene. So in 2004, a 21-year-old model auditioned for Cochus's site. Cochus wasn't keen on this performer, but the model said, well, you have to check out my 17-year-old boyfriend. That boyfriend was Sean Lockhart, who many of us probably know under his performer name, which is Brent Corrigan. A guy who became a kind of internationally renowned gay porn star. Any comments on Brent Corrigan?
I've never met him personally. It's so funny. And part of the reason I have the name Joel Someone is because I hate porn names. I fucking hate them.
Yeah.
I just do. I know like three people who are Jake M's. I know three porn Jake M's. All right. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? So like, I can never, like, people will say, oh, do you know da-da-da? I'm like, let's pull out Twitter and we'll see if I do. I'm like, I don't remember. I hardly remember people's real names. So the multiple names thing just completely pisses me off.
I think the origins of the Brent Corrigan name as well are, comes from, like, he just flipped through the phone book and just picked two names.
It's always something stupid. No offense. No offense to people and their porn names. It's always something stupid. It's always like, yeah, my grandmother really liked the name Ralph. No offense to people and their stupid porn names.
So let's hear, you know, it's not all about, you know, Corrigan's life, this story, but it's probably worth talking briefly about Corrigan. Corrigan was born on the 31st of October 1986 in Idaho. His mother, he was raised by a single mother and had a number of siblings. Seems that his mother had a fairly loose leash on him because he was able to spend his weekends in Los Angeles hanging out with older boyfriends. And one of these older boyfriends first introduced Corrigan to Cochus.
Piece of shit, Jeremy. Fucking running around with all his friends thinking he's so fucking hot. Come on, I'm 18 years old. I can handle it. And Brent just shrugs me off like I'm nothing. But he does have nice lips, though.
Corrigan's first video that he did with Cobra Video, Every Pool Boy's Dream, occurred 9 months shy of his 18th birthday, so when he was still 17. Cochus claims that Corrigan used a fake ID. Corrigan claims that he's full of shit and he knew that he was underage when he shot that first film. Corrigan's brand, because he's a very, very sexy, attractive man, Corrigan's brand was enormously popular. It increased the profits for Cobra Video exponentially, and in fact, it made Cobra Video a profitable company across the board. Corrigan and Cochus appeared to develop, in some reports they developed a romantic relationship. Other reports just say that there was a sexual relationship, which added a complicated dynamic to the professional arrangement in that.
Chance it could have been at one point consensual kind of sexual nonsense. I know I've been intimate with many directors and even cameramen.
Hey. I don't think that this was, again, depending on whether you're getting the porn sob story version or the more, I don't want to say cynical industry version, but, the more realist industry version is some people describe this as that it bordered on abusive. Other people just say that this is just the kind of arrangement that these things happen, particularly on a small scale set, that this is just kind of stuff that happens. Corrigan continued for several films with Cobra Video, occasionally jumping ship and doing some work for other studios. Interestingly, though, Cochus had the trademark to the Brent Corrigan name, and we'll see that aspect of it is ultimately what led to Cochus's eventual murder. In 2005, Corrigan met 38-year-old Grant Roy at a party. Roy was a local trucking executive.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So he met Roy at a party and eventually ended up moving in with Roy. And it was at this point that Corrigan started to complain to Roy about, well, Cochus is taking a lot of the money that I could be earning. It's time that I started to actually started my own venture. And that's when Roy and Corrigan started plans for Corrigan to leave Cobra Video, take control of his brand, and start his own website. They tried to start a website. Cochus was very angry about this, obviously, because this is his moneymaker, and sued them, and it resulted in this very, very, very long legal battle that got quite messy quite quickly. One of the first things that Corrigan did, which is, the lawyer in me is like this is kind of smart. The first thing that he did was to say that, oh, well, you've got three videos that you put out there in which I was underage. So he had to pull all those videos down and lost profits from Corrigan's early years. So let's talk about our killers. So around the same time that Corrigan and Roy were getting into this legal dispute with Cochus, two Virginia Beach-based escorts, Harlow Quandra and Joseph Caracas, was trying to start their own gay porn venture called BoyBatter.com. Quadra was a 20-year-old Navy recruit. Caracas was a 28-year-old former Marine. They met whilst in the Navy, and Caracas introduced Quadra to escorting. By some accounts, the relationship was quite one-sided, with the younger Quadra very dependent on Caracas in terms of money and also direction in relation to his escorting and, you know, porn career generally. In 2006, Quadra started emailing Corrigan and Roy because they knew that Corrigan and Roy were trying to start off their own separate venture from Cobra Video, and Quadra and Caracas kind of wanted to get in on some sort of porn partnership type deal. This resulted in the 11th of January 2007, where the four of them all met up at a gay porn trade show in Las Vegas. At that trade show, Quadra and Caracas made their pitch to Corrigan and Roy about starting a new porn production company. And Corrigan and Roy weren't very impressed. In fact, they got the idea that Boy Batter wasn't really making any money. Which, I mean, I'm sure that was probably true back in 2007, but it would probably be even more true now. I can't imagine starting a small...
You know, it's distribution. What the one thing you learn about, like, this industry is, like, I like working with lots of different studios. I've worked with 17 different websites. Like, I've worked with a lot of, and you said porn star before. I always like to kind of, like, hold off. I'm like, no. And I it's kind of you. Thank you so much. But, like, I'm a porn actor. I'm like a working porn actor right now. You know what I mean? Like, it's gig to gig.
You're like, what's it equivalent in, like, mainstream acting? Like, you're like a small scale character actor. What are you, like a Steve Buscemi?
I'm more of like, I'm more like the Maggie Gyllenhaal, like,
okay, yeah,
kind of thing. Like,
she's been in big things.
Like, you know what I mean? She's done some stuff. Exactly. Then you don't know where the fuck she is. But exactly. The one thing about kind of like all these studios, and what's really important that you realize, is they have distribution around the world. Mm. And a lot of these studios in America, especially, that are like the big names and stuff, are huge elsewhere, like absolutely gigantic, like, for instance, in Australia. You know what I mean? Like, certain things have kind of like the distribution that people smaller don't. So starting off a website and not having kind of like the blessing of like a big studio back in the day was kind of the kiss of death. Like, it was kind of like on your way to getting blacklisted.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So that's probably why they weren't doing
no stuff. and certainly Corrigan and Roy were not impressed. At this discussion, though, when they're all meeting at this trade show, they all got quite drunk, and the topic of Brian Cochis kind of came up, with Quadra and Caracas talking about the fact that, well, you know, if we wanted to do a porn partnership together, we'd like to be able to use the Brent Corrigan brand. How are we going to deal with this guy? Quadra then started to say certain things which made the conversation shift a little. He would say things like, what if Brian left the country? What if he went to Canada? Corrigan, who was quite drunk and didn't quite understand the full context of what was being saying, said that, oh, he'd only come back and sue us some more. In reply to that, Caracas replied that Quadra knows someone who would do anything for him. That was how that was left. At this point, Roy kind of understood where the conversation was heading and just said, we don't need coaches to leave the country, and change the subject entirely and try to just end it there. They then left this meeting, and ostensibly, there was no other business relationship in place. However, that discussion would sow the seeds of Brian Cochis' eventual murder. The sequence of events is that right after the trade show, Quadra paid for a background check on Brian Cochis, which gave them Cochis' address, which is kind of scary that you can just pay a bit of money and then find out where someone's personal address is. Quadra then sent an email to Cobra Video under the name Danny Moylan, claiming he would like to model. Danny Moylan is a terrible performer name. Anyway,
really terrible name. was about to say. The second you heard me rant about performer names, now you're going to think about all of them. You're going to be like, oh my God. I like mine because mine's purposefully stupid. Like, I have a purposefully stupid porn name. Like, I love my purposefully stupid porn name because it's one you could still say at the airport. Like, someone can pick me up with a sign and not feel embarrassed. Be like, Joel someone? Like, you know, like, I'm okay with that. Whereas it's like, you hear people, it's like, Vig 8 Veiny Deep or something like that. They're like, you know what I mean? Like, I that's my rule with porn names is they can't be too normal to where you're like, oh, who's Bill Johnson? He sounds cute.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, like 13-inch, like, dong kind of thing like that. You just have to, where's the middle ground of that?
I feel like US porn, gay porn stars, it has this very, like, California-y, like, it's like Lance or
Jake.
Jake is big.
I don't mean to keep bringing Jake up, but fucking Jacobs, I know enough of them, all right?
So this Danny Moylan wanted to model and coaches was keen. Quadra and Caracas went to a gun shop and bought a folding knife with a serrated edge and a Smith & Wesson.
That's a useful 38. Thing to get. I was about to say, that's a useful thing to get at a gun shop.
A knife, yeah. They also got a gun. They got a 38 caliber Smith & Wesson as well as some ammunition. Quadra also rented an SUV.
Can you do the Australian come on thing knife? The knife, come on. That's not a knife.
Oh, you call that a knife? See, all the things that the... Yeah. You're so amused by that. All the things that Americans love about Australia, we just find it, like, really cringeworthy, like the crocodile Dundee.
Was that, like, a super racist thing to do? I did not mean to insult you, like... Like, I realize that's probably something that's very sacred in your culture, and I don't mean to insult the crowd.
I will not, no. I refuse to be a little Australian puppet. So the day of the murder was the 24th of January 2007, in which Quadra and probably also Caracas, although it's a bit unclear, attended Cochise's home. It's unclear exactly what happened, but Quadra claims that Cochis started hitting on him, and all we know, whether it was Caracas that did it or Quadra that did it, is that Cochis's neck was slashed so severely that it nearly decapitated him. His hyoid bone, his trachea, and his left carotid artery were all completely severed. After his throat was slit and he died, he was stabbed another 28 times. His house was then set on fire, and the fire so damaged his body that he had to be identified via dental records. So quite a savage attack, considering as well that this was done, you know, it's a financial gain motive really behind all of this. You wouldn't expect quite that level of viciousness.
Like, why did the thing that's sounding like, it sounds like they probably got drunk and did this. Like, because they said, when they said when they were talking about it, there was like a bottle of wine out, him and coaches were drinking wine and stuff.
I don't know if I want to blame booze on this matter. Like,
I'm not blaming booze, but like, I'm saying that they probably were very heightened.
I'm sure it happened, and I'm sure the motivation was to get it over and done with as quickly as possible. And I suppose there is some rationale to the idea of what's one way to just ensure someone is dead. It's just to keep going and going and going with a knife until you're absolutely sure that they're dead. But I still don't. Yeah, if this was meant to be an assassination, though, like, they could have just used the gun, but they chose quite a personal weapon. Loud.
You see, the funny thing about it is, it's like after the fact, it seems so obvious how they fucked up and stuff like that. But there was like things in place which were them trying to kind of like cover their tracks
using the fake name.
And using a gun is one of those things that, like, you can hear it. Like,
that's
you
true.
Hear a gun.
I Game don't over. Think that they were very smart, though, because straight after the murder, I think the next day, Corrigan received a phone call from Quadra, essentially saying, you know, turn on the news. And Corrigan did, finding that Cochise had been murdered. Corrigan was shocked, and Quadra in reply said, I guess my guy went overboard. Because so the, you know, the implication that we're trying to say is that they had like hired someone to do this, that they didn't do it personally. In reply to that, Corrigan contacted Roy, and then both of them contacted the police. And so Corrigan and Roy started to negotiate with the police. Somehow it got leaked that Quadra and Caracas were the chief suspects. And there was, I think, a lot of like gay porn websites and news sites and stuff were talking about the fact that they were the chief suspects. Rather jarringly, Quadra started to take advantage of that in his escort profiles, and would say things in the ads such as, Harlow's not a killer, but he'll act like one if you want him to. Which is particularly, yeah, like, I'm sure someone took him up on that. But that to me indicates that they had some level of confidence that they were going to get away with it that I just don't understand.
Clearly these two people had kind of like a very loose kind of a grasp on reality, and it that's kind of what you run into in this thing, is you're in it to win it, and once you start crossing barriers, you just keep going.
I think the impression that I get is that they kind of viewed themselves like they were like gangster hitmen, like taking care of business type stuff. But they just, the fact that police within, you know, less than 24 hours knew exactly who they were kind of just indicates that they didn't really have a good grasp on this. Despite the fact that they had committed this murder and they'd already told Corrigan that they were somehow involved, they still wanted to continue with the business venture, the idea of the gay porn venture. Caracas emailed Roy, you know, when are we going to start filming? You know, we had an agreement. Roy didn't respond to any of it, in which case he got another message which said, we all know what you said at the AVN in Vegas, and we have it on tape recorder. Don't fuck with us. So the idea was, you know, you have to enter into this business venture now because you're implicated in all of this, because you arranged this murder.
Did they ever release the recordings or what they said, or were they, was that just a bluff?
I wonder if there was actually recordings, because that certainly hasn't been released to the public, whether or not it exists somewhere else. They probably destroyed it. I mean, if they were smart, but they're not smart, so maybe not. Clearly they had a lot of trust in both Corrigan and Roy, because they were admitting all these things. And so what they did is, because they wanted to cement the deal, they arranged a meeting with Corrigan and Roy in San Diego. Little did they know that Corrigan and Roy were both wearing a wire, because they decided to...
Which, this is the funniest part of the case for me.
The undercover porn star?
The undercover porn star, but it was undercover at a nude beach. That's the second meeting.
So the first,
that's the second one. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm skipping. I'm sorry.
You are.
Sorry.
So the first one, they were slightly aware that they were that they were at risk of being recorded, and so all that was said at this point was that Quadra leaned over to Corrigan during this meeting and said, don't worry, he went quick. That was the one thing that was recorded on this occasion. They then met again at a clothing optional spot of San Diego, which was a beach. And I think this was them thinking that they were being really clever, in that there would be no wires, because most people would be nude.
That was the one thing about the... Because I when I was listening to things about the case, there was this cheese ball moment that they had where they were like, how do you get a wire on two naked men? And the solution for that was they hid it in their car keys, because they needed, that was the one thing they would have on them as they went on to see them. So that was the knowledge I got. It was apparently like a big gag. Like, they all thought it was like the funniest fucking thing in the entire world.
Probably.
So that was,
all the cops in this case, I'm sure they thought that everything was hilarious. I'm sure they thought the whole thing was just a fucking joke. Unfortunately.
The one thing you realize about this business is it's really relatively normal. Like, once you get past all of the... See, and what's hard about things like this in our industry is just like, this is a bad example. This is an example of where everything went wrong.
Yeah.
There was people kind of like lots of things. This was early kind of like porn history. That stuff doesn't really happen anymore because like, it's a lot of business people. Like the first shoot you do, you realize very quickly they don't put up with nonsense.
Well, and I think you could even argue that this happened because two dumb guys kind of believed the hype about the industry a little bit and wanted to be this sleazy gangster character. So, you know, I think that you can make it, you know, that the sensationalist depiction of pornography almost motivated this crime a little bit because they thought that, well,
we're, it's true.
Yeah, that we're porn stars, so we have to play up this, like, gangster role. So at the nude beach, Quadro made a number of further, made some pretty damning comments. He said things like, seeing that fucker go down, actually it's sick, but it made me feel better inside. He said, it almost felt like I got revenge, and I know that sounds fucked up. So he's admitted to the crimes, basically, at this point. And so once those recordings were entered into evidence, on the 15th of May, 4 months after the killing, both Quadro and Caracas were arrested in Virginia Beach and charged with homicide, robbery, and arson. Both initially pleaded not guilty. Quadra, always a class act, started selling free Harlow Quadra teddy bears, tote bags, and thongs online to pay for his legal defense.
Smart. I won't lie.
Look, yes, it is a bit smart.
It's just how well that kind of crap sells is the only thing, too. It's like, believe it or not, people usually, like, the amount of money probably made on it was probably pathetic.
It's also kind of a collector's item.
More desperate than it was.
Like, from a kind of perverse true crime fan perspective, I kind of get the, like, imagine getting a signed tote bag from one of the murderers.
Really? Okay, all right. I can see that.
Yeah, look, this is my fucked up side. on the 8th of December 2008, Caracas changed his plea, ended up pleading guilty to second-degree murder, theft, and tampering with evidence. He was sentenced to life in prison without parole. Quadra maintained his not guilty plea. When his trial occurred, he claimed that Caracas did everything, and was also claiming that he was under duress to be there that day and to help cover up the murder. The problem was there was a recording of him talking about the fact that he had killed him and that it made him feel good, which seems to completely contradict that narrative.
Well, the one thing that they kept saying is like it kept flipping back and forth between the two of them whenever evidence would be introduced. Like whenever evidence would be introduced, the story would utterly change and then to corroborate the evidence or make sense of it. And so that was the one thing that they said from the entire time that was really hard was the fact that none of the facts were able to be kind of like they changed their stories just too many times.
Well,
and they just knew they were never going to get the real thing out of either of them.
In particular, Caracas, I think this just must be waxing and waning depending on how he was feeling about his relationship with Quadro at any point. Because at one point he said, I did all the killing, he had nothing to do with it. And then he changed to, oh no, we both did it. And then at one point, possibly because he was feeling vindictive, said that Quadro did everything and he was shocked. So who knows what's right there. Quadro's evidence was not supported and he was convicted of murder, robbery, and arson and sentenced to life in prison without parole. In 2016, Justin Kelly directed King Cobra, which was a film based on these events, and it was based on a book that dramatized the events called Cobra Killer, Gay Porn Murder by Andrew E. Stoner and Peter A. Conway. Quadro still maintains his innocence and has gone through all avenues of appeal. And I just saw that his final route of appeal, a habeas corpus application, actually occurred March this year. So mm-hmm. he made an application March this year saying that he was falsely imprisoned and that there were all these issues with criminal procedure, but that was ultimately rejected. So he's got no other choices here. He will spend the rest of his life in prison. In terms of Brent Corrigan, he's now not performing under that name anymore, as far as I know, unless he's gone back to it. So Sean Lockhart, he has continued his career in porn. He's also kind of dabbled in mainstream acting roles. He's not a very good actor, but, you know, well, he can give it a go.
Sometimes we're a little too cocky as porn actors. We're like, yeah, I'm the best at this. I remember the first time I ate someone out, I was like, yeah, I'm the best at eating this. I've never done this before, but I'm the fucking best at it.
Frankly, I wasn't. You've met better.
I wasn't. I needed a lesson.
So he's kind of moved past this, and he was very critical of the 2016 film and how that depicted the murder. I think from his perspective, it's a period of his life that he doesn't want to think about or talk about, and he wants to move on from. Thank you to Joel for coming on the show. You can follow Joel on Twitter at JoelSomeoneXXX, or you can also follow him on Instagram. Do people follow on Instagram? Follow him on Instagram at JoelSomeoneTramp. You can follow Sinister Sissies, as always, at Sinister Sissies. We have had our first Patreon supporter. Thank you so much to our first ever supporter. And if you'd like to support the show, please have a look at Sinister Sissies on Patreon. You can follow my personal Twitter at Jarrett Bartle. And until next time, stay sinister.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.